Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. The New Zealand International Film Festival is upon us once again, and among the smorgasbord of features and documentaries is a rather unique tale, Salaam Rugby. This documentary tells the rather unusual story of the rise of women's rugby in Iran. Yep, you heard me right. The director of this extraordinary film is Faramaz Beheshti, and he joins us now. Well, I suppose the most obvious question is, why did you decide to make this film?
Well, the reason is I finished my film school in 2006, January, and my intention was to shoot a drama in Iran, but after spending 6 or 7 months there, I couldn't secure permissions because as far as, obviously, I've never lived in Iran, and, you know, these are not easy steps to take there. And so, coincidentally, just before flying out, one day, every morning I was, you know, I checked the Iranian news and whatever. So I come across this one photo of this girl playing rugby. And I thought, wow, I wish I had done a documentary instead of a drama. I would have worked on this. And, you know, things happened and I couldn't do what I was meant to do. And I ended up, you know, as I was getting a bit more depressed about the drama and the permissions on that front, I started to think more and more about, hey, let's work on the rugby film. And unlike the other first experience where I couldn't secure any permission, because I did this film through the Iranian Rugby Federation, it was completely different. Then, you know, all the doors opened to me and all permissions and police permissions were secured.
So they were actually helpful. I was going to ask you about that.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, you can't do projects like that if you don't work under the umbrella of, you know, okay, Iranian Rugby Federation is officially an NGO, but we know in Iran there's a lot more involvement of the government. So, yeah, of course, I could have not done this if there was, you know, with their blessing. Actually, more than that, you can say I lived in the Rugby Federation for almost a year. And, yeah, they've been very helpful. And, you know, the other thing I like to say is most of my shooting session were chaperoned. And the only thing allowed me to kind of get a bit of moments was the fact that this project went, you know, twice as long as what expected. And, you know, that allowed me to, for, you know, a couple of reshoots where already I knew the security people in this new city and all. So that was it.
When you say, I mean, you say you came across, you know, this rugby story. What was it that sort of made you go, this is the story I have to tell, this is the documentary? Was it the sort of, I guess, the juxtaposition of, you know, women playing a very manly sport in a country that has obviously quite, you know, interesting ways of dealing with women?
No, to be quite honest, it has to do with my life because I'm kind of late comer in life into this profession, despite having worked in, you know, similar types of advertising and photography. And I've been involved briefly with a festival in Iran, but excuse me, I've come quite late and I finished my film course in Wellington in 2006. And it was a question of really, you know, how much serious I was into this. And I wasn't going out well. Don't get me wrong, I'm not being, you know, snobbish, but I didn't have the opportunity to start like anyone else and go through the gaveta, as they say, like through the routine and, you know, take my time and achieve. I had to find something and become a filmmaker. And, you know, that was it. This was the thing I could do and what I did, you know.
I mean, you obviously have a background, you know, for 20 years you've been working in photography in Dubai, commercial photography, setting up a studio there. So what was it that made you decide to make films, you know, I wouldn't say this late in life, but obviously you're still a young man.
Yeah, no, well, yeah, no, there was definitely getting sick of photography because I must say that, you know, one should never talk maybe this way. You know, I got a lot from photography, but at the same time, at one point, especially somewhere after 2000 or so, I was really doing this mechanical big shoots, small shoots, good money, bad money, but, you know, there was no heart in it. And I had always meant to do a course and learn about filmmaking. That was it. When we decided to move to New Zealand, then, you know, that was my, you know, opportunity. And I said, that's it.
Are you actually a fan of rugby? Do you watch the game?
You know, it's funny, I grew up in Italy, of course, it's a culture nation, but there has always been few rugby things, which I remember since my childhood. There will be classics in Europe. If you lived in Europe, you would know. One is when France plays England. Either way, it could be in Paris or London. And the other, when Puma, the Argentinian, would visit the France, the French team in France. And that, I remember, it would be one of the few matches telecasting. And I would always watch these two events, I think there were four times a year. So, but, you know, to be quite honest, when I even started the project itself, didn't know much of the rules. You know, it was not my game. And but obviously, every time there is a World Cup, every time the All Blacks are playing and, you know, stuff like that, of course, you know, I make a point of watching. And I like to also reiterate that the few Iranians that I met who know rugby at the better level, they are mostly 99% All Black fans. So that was also pleasant to see.
It's an interesting story, I mean, because the way that rugby got to Iran in the first place, it obviously has a fairly long, I mean, it's a relatively new game, rugby, isn't it? And yet it's been there since the 1920s.
Yeah. It was an exclusive to the British circle. It's been there since the 20s. Actually, maybe a few years earlier, a few visiting businessmen would have definitely played between all those conspiracies within the embassies that was going on at the time. So, but yeah, there's been. But it's always been, you know, Iranian known mainly American football. So when you say rugby, most people don't know what is rugby. When they see the ball, they say, oh, yeah, we know. But you can be sure 99% what they mean is the American football. Because, you know, most Iranian, like myself, we grew up on those 1950s, you know, Hollywood. We were bombarded. And so those few people who think they know the game, they're really thinking about American football.
I have to say one thing I enjoy about what I've seen in the film is just actually seeing ordinary Iranian people and the places they live, because through the news media we get such a narrow view of the nation.
That was actually exactly what I, you know, what actually I found the most pleasant was what I actually I tried to share was the people, because, you know, one thing is the government and what they bear on the news in that moment, you know, but, you know, we are beyond that, and Iranians are beyond that. And I really wanted to try and share as much as possible, you know, the way they were and their hospitality.
So you said you've never lived in Iran, or?
No, I left Iran when I think my father migrated to Milano when I was four, and I never lived there. I had a very brief four summers where I worked as an interpreter. By the funny enough, the Iranian government at the time, there were not many technical translators, and I was very always good with my language and my Italian. And you know, I had only this brief three summers leading to the revolution in 1979, where I visited three summers, and then I couldn't go back anymore. And only about 10 years ago, when President Khatami was elected, there was an era of reform in Iran, and he gave immediately to people like me access, because we didn't have any political problem. It was a military one, which is quite tough in Iran. Especially my generation was the one who was supposed to be fighting the Iran-Iraq war when it broke. So we were like kind of the black sheep of the escapees. But then, you know, yeah, so I've been allowed really back into the country 10 years ago, and I had the luck to run a film festival on behalf of Sony for 2 years. But that was it. And that was mainly in Tehran. I'd never seen the country.
So this making this film would have been as much of an eye-opener for you about your homeland as it was for be for the audience.
Yeah, it was basically what I was really looking forward, because, you know, I kind of have this huge, immense Persian feeling in me. You know, I can never deny it, no matter how many years I lived outside. But I never kind of being or seeing my country, and that was wonderful. One of the most rewarding part of this making this 3.5 year journey was, you know, seeing the country.
Would you recommend it as a tourist destination? I was watching bits of your documentary. I was thinking I'd like to go there.
Oh, because, you know, funny you saying that, but, you know, when we were in Dubai regularly, especially for winter, people might not know Iran has some of the best skiing in the world. And 2.5 hours drive from where I live in Tehran, where my flat used to be. You know, you get this, I think FIS, longest certified treeless, rockless, perfect ski slope, and which is one of the about 10 or 12 around Tehran. So, you know, before moving here, every winter we would take a bunch of foreign friends. And, you know, once you go there, you realize that there are two realities. One is Iran on the news. One is Iran, the people. And, you know, you're dealing with the people.
This is exactly why we do this radio show, Russell, so that we can get foreign skiing tips on, on little visiting children. Look, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with your film and the festival. It's called Salaam Rugby. All the details will be at nzff.co.nz. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And if you'd like to go and catch Salaam Rugby, check out nzff.co.nz for dates and times. Coming up after the break, Flip Grater.